Accession number 30395, Mrs. Barry Summerfield, Reel 15. Could you tell me then what? Well, I think we've gone to the 38 set, the use of the 38 set. Well, if you could tell me as much as possible about that.
Well, what happened? It was about that time that the army started to bring in some new stuff. And among them was the 38 set. This was a very high frequency set. It had just four channels, and you could converse without using your main radio to other tanks within the area. Later on, it was adapted so that you could actually contact units on the outside, i.e. the infantry and people like that. There were teething problems with it because it was a brand new thing. It had never been tried, as it were, in semi-action before. So, but it was an interesting thing because none of us had ever visualised anything like this in the way that radio was. I mean, we had to be taught what very high frequency was. We didn't even know what it meant. After the initial teething problems...
What sort of teething problems did it have? Remember?
Well, yeah, if you went alongside a building, for instance, in Warminster, there's a whole village which is used for training purposes. It's empty, it's just used for training purposes. And if you went into, say you were doing a mock village attack, and you parked alongside a house, you might find that if it was attacked the other side of the house, you couldn't get in touch with it. Things like that, sort of silly things, which they eventually ironed the problems out. But of course, the mainstay of the tank had always been, and was until I left the army, anyway, the 19 set. But that was the big, one of the big innovations that we had at Warminster.
So would you have both wirelesses in the tank? Or?
Oh yes, yeah, you had both wirelesses in the tank. If I remember rightly, the 38 set was up near the commander because... he would be the one that would need to use it more than anybody. It wasn't a thing that you use as an internal item.
Now, how did life progress then? You're on exercises with the infantry.
Oh yeah, we were very very heavily involved. You know, I mean, we were doing a major exercise about once a week, once a fortnight, and they were major exercises. They weren't small exercises. You would be involved with the battalion of infantry, whoever they were. As I said before, I think I can't remember the infantry that we had with us then, what unit it was. My colleagues might remember, and you might be able to pick it up somewhere else, that one. But other than that, yeah, we were heavily involved. We had normal leave periods and things like that. Our tour of duty there was 1 year.
Now, were you enjoying the life?
I mean, oh, yeah, it was great. Great fun, because it was everything, A, was new, and B, you were always on the go. You were always doing something. You never sat about. We obviously used to go into the nappy at night, but other than that, yeah, it was great.
So what happens next, then?
And then we did our year's tour there and got shipped back to Germany. around about that time.
Now, when would this be then? A year would be round. We thought round about May. So would that mean, round about May 47?
Must have been. You would know better than I. But when we went back, it wasn't long. We were posted to. Lingen, L-I-N-G-E-N, Lingen in Germany, right? We had a barracks there which would...
This is with the whole... were you rejoining the rest of the unit?
We were joining the regiment, yeah. So, of course, this was an innovation for me as well because, you know, now we were a whole regiment. I'd never been with a whole regiment before, just with a squadron. So it took on a whole new dimension.
And what was it like being with the whole regiment? I mean, how
did it... Oh, it was a lot different, obviously.
In what way?
Well, there was more spit and polish, more discipline. It wasn't quite as relaxed as it had been with the squadron at the School of Infantry. We had a lot more duties, regimental duties to perform guards, things like regimental balls and all that. We used to take part in all those. We had our own tank park. And we were very fortunate because the barracks we took over were ex-SS barracks, and they had a really, really good tank park there as well. We had a fairly heavy range where we used to do our firing, our live firing, our driving training and everything. It was a big tank range, but in actual fact it was the Lunenburg Heath.
Let's have a look at the barracks first. What were the barracks like? Did they differ from an English barrack that much?
Yeah, they were, for a start, they're always about three or four stories tall, for a start. They're much, much more modern, much more up to date. The Germans believed in keeping their troops, you know, in quite a bit of luxury. And it was around about that time also we got involved with the Berlin Airlift.
I'll come to that. So, were you still in big long rooms with 32 rooms?
They weren't that big. If I remember right, it was only about 10 or 20 to each room. They weren't all that big.
So that's less than the British ones?
Yeah, a lot less than the British ones, yeah. And there wasn't all the business of the corporals and things like that. The corporals had their own accommodation, had their own mess and everything like that.
What about the facilities, the latrines and showers?
Oh, very, very up to date, very, very modern.
Now, you mentioned some of the things. What about, say, the ball? We'll come to the Berlin Airlift later. What about the balls? You know, you mentioned.
We used to have to form, because obviously we were in regimental uniform, full uniform, and sabres, the whole bit. And if the colonel was out throwing a ball, then we would form the guard of honour outside the mansion and all that sort of thing, or outside the officers' mess.
What was that like? Can you explain a bit more about the full uniform? We haven't really talked about this. You've got the full ceremonial uniform.
Oh, yeah, but the full hussar's dress. Well, it was blues with all the gold piping, the little pillbox hat, your sabre.
What was a guard of honour like? What would you do?
Basically, you would form it up like a guard, but of course, as you had spurs on, and boots rather than army boots, you had riding boots on, in other words, then you didn't march all that far. You would normally stand on the steps, say about three on either side, with your sabres drawn, so that the ladies and the officers could all see you as they walked up. There were other duties as well. If you were lucky, you got to have the barman's job.
What was that like?
Oh, that was lovely. If you could get it, free booze all night. you could mess waiter as well. These were all extra duties, though, because the normal mess waiters wouldn't be able to cope with a function that big anyway. So they would pull in extra men. It was all voluntary. You were never ordered to do it, except the guard. You were ordered to do that. But if you worked in the mess itself, it was all voluntary.
Now, what about that? So, duties were just. What were your duties like there? Working the tank park again?
Yeah, very. They're quite heavy. You know, we were training all the time because you've got to remember at that point, although we didn't know it as ordinary soldiers, but there was this tension between the East and the West, which is in actual fact the start of the Cold War around about 1947. And we were warned then, you know, that we had to patrol the border because we were very close to the Russian border anyway. We were border patrol and things like that all the time. We didn't have the real idea that there was trouble with the Russians.
You just didn't realise that?
No, we didn't. No, not really. Not to the end. Not now that you know today what the situation was. We never realised it was that serious. I mean, we knew they said about the Russians and this, that and the other, but, you know, nobody took it over serious.
Now, what were the border patrols like? What do you remember of them?
Four men to a jeep, just drive up and down. Stop every so often, just observe, really. And often
wasn't in a tank at all, it was just in jeeps?
No, in jeeps mainly. Now, we never took tanks that far over. I think that the idea was that might be provocation, you know. So
you just drive along?
Just drive along the roads, the border roads, and that was it. And I have to say that nine times out of ten, we didn't even know what we were looking for. We just drove.
And what about the exercise on Lunenburg Heath? What sort of exercise did you get up to?
Oh, we got up, yeah, there was a lot of international stuff that went on there, you know, other units, Dutch, Belgians, all that sort of thing. We were often involved with foreign troops on that, but not very often with the Americans. We did the Americans later on.
And what would a typical exercise be like with them?
Oh, you'd be out for about 4 or 5 days and nights under canvas, and whatever the exercise was, you know. The trouble is that when you're just an ordinary soldier, you don't really know what the big picture is. So you don't really know what all was going on.
Now, what about the beginning of the Berlin airlift? You mentioned that. Were you aware of that?
We were aware that there was a problem. We didn't realise how serious it was until they sent us up to Hamburg. And then...
Was this a temporary move or a permanent?
Well, no, it was a temporary move. I think we had accommodation up there somewhere in a barracks or something. And then they shifted us to the airfield at Hamburg. And then we started loading coal onto Dakotas. Those were the only planes we saw there.
Now, what do you remember about that? That doesn't sound too nice.
Well, it was a bloody dirty job. I remember that. It was a filthy job because, you know, coal dust and all that were like miners. All we did is we just loaded each Dakota with loose coal.
Not in bags, then?
No, it wasn't in bags. It wasn't bagged, it was loose.
So you just shoveled it aboard?
Yeah, well, I can't really remember that. I've got a vague feeling somewhere that it was put on three tonners because they were more level with the entrance to the aeroplane. And then we shoveled it in there. But all I can remember is it's a bloody dirty job. And we did that for, a good few weeks anyway. And that's the only thing we ever did was coal. Everybody else was getting the good jobs. We got the coal.
Now, what about nights out when you were in Germany? What do you remember of that? You know, what would you
well,
do?
Well, mainly, they had in Lingen itself... and also Lunenburg, we went to Lunenburg, they had a naffy in town, a big one. So we used to go there.
What did the naffy offer, a big canteen like that?
More or less whatever you wanted. You know, it was pretty comprehensive. And it wasn't over expensive. Cigarettes, beer, you had a restaurant there, and all that bit.
Darts? Games?
Yeah, weekly dance and games and things like that. We weren't, pardon me, when we were at Lingen, we weren't encouraged to go to town to mix with the Germans. We weren't encouraged to do that. When we went to Lunenburg eventually, that was different. And by that time, things were a lot different.
And why weren't you meant to mix with the Germans? I mean, was this still non-fraternisation?
Oh, basically. Although, I seem to remember that a few blokes at that point were actually going out with German girls, and some of them finished up marrying them.
You weren't encouraged to.
We weren't encouraged to, no.
So, did you?
I seem to remember we vaguely used to try and chat the birds up. Obviously, I mean, we were that sort of age where you do it. But I don't think we had any very, very serious close contact with the Germans.
Did you go to around the German bars and things, or would you normally go to your own nappy?
No, we'd normally go to around there. I don't remember going into German cafes, because they weren't bars, they were cafes, very often. We didn't go in very much. I think if I remember rightly, one of the problems was cash. We had British baht. We didn't have cash as such. We had British forces currency, and I don't think the Germans liked handling it. They didn't like taking it.
No. So what was this? Was a separate money then?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You've not been told about the baht.
Well, I have from, but tell them on the tape. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, the British Army bought out their own currency. It was called bahts. I can't exactly remember what it stood for. British Army Forces Currency or something, and they were. Notes, they were always notes, although, no, tell a lie, they weren't, because at one point we had coins which were plastic with a caption on which said what their value was. But basically there were notes from a penny upwards, because in those days obviously a penny counted for something. From a penny upwards. But ordinary English currency, we didn't have very much contact with it.
Or German.
German notes were no good to us. Couldn't use them. We couldn't spend them anywhere except in a German bar. And there wasn't much that you could buy in Germany in those days. You know, you couldn't go into a shop and buy what you wanted because there wasn't many shops or anything like that. So we basically relied upon the nappy.
So what happens? What's the next? How are you doing? You're still in your crew, are you?
Oh, yeah. At that point, I think by that time, I'd probably got promoted to about Lance Corporal.
Now, did that make a difference?
Like the Lance Corporal bit? Yeah, it made a difference because it gave you a bit of authority. It didn't give you any more money because you were unpaid. It gave you a sense of responsibility. You know, you were now suddenly responsible for somebody, literally. And of course, the Lance Corporal being the lowest in the British Army took all the can back for everything. If anything went wrong, the Lance Corporal took it in the ear. Ling and I can remember some funny episodes.
Tell us them. What happened?
Right, funny episode was the winter, that bad winter. 47, that was one of the worst winters I've ever had. It was so bad that we actually covered the Barrett Square with water, made it into an ice rink. We had an ice hockey team, things like that. You made your own entertainment, obviously. There was no entertainment unless you made it. That sort of thing that we did. Everybody was very keen on shooting, so there was a small arms club.
What was that like?
Because the war had only just finished, really, in a way, there was an awful lot of German guns still about, handguns and rifles and things like that. So we formed a little club with all these guns, which we got out of without any problems at all, and we had a shooting club.
But where would you shoot?
We had a little range there and everything like that. Also, there were the Beagles. Don't forget the Beagles. I've forgotten about those. Yeah, the 8th Hussars were famous for their pack of Beagles. Beagles are dogs that you run after. You don't ride after them. You run after them. Yeah, they're not like a hunting pack. I think they are a hunting pack, but they're a hunting pack with a difference, in so much as everybody runs behind the Beagle. I used to bloody well hate it, right? Because it was always Saturday afternoon when you weren't supposed to be working.
Tell us what a day out beagling was like.
Well, it'd start around about late morning, and you'd go about, I don't know, 10 or 20 bloody miles over there chasing whatever you could chase, basically. And eventually, when everybody was knackered, you all went back, covered in mud. It was a very unrewarding thing for troopers to have to do. Nobody liked it. But you did it, whether you liked it or not.
Which sport? Any other sport?
Yeah, we had our own football team, obviously.
Did you play?
No, I didn't play. The only thing I did was I took a referee's course. I can't remember where I went for it. It was somewhere in South Germany. They sent me off to do a referee's course. And after that, I became one of the regimental referees. That was interesting.
Now, tell us about the football activities then. I mean, you know, what was it like as referee?
Oh, it was good because you don't have... I mean, it's not like football today for a start. It was then, it was disciplined. You know, people didn't argue with the bloody referee. That was one thing you never did. You blew the whistle, called up whatever it was, and that was it. Everybody obeyed. There was never any question about any prima donnas or anything like that. That didn't happen. I think there were tennis courts. We played tennis during the summer. I was a bit keen on that. I like tennis. And I think we had a rugby team, but I didn't get involved with that somehow, for some reason.
Now what, so, you went to Hamburg, shoveled coal, that's it. What happened next? You went back to...
Then we went back to...
Lingen.
Lingen. We did some big schemes in southern Germany with the Americans. I remember that. We went to Hanlin, the part where the Pied Piper comes from. Well, that was an interesting one.
What do you remember about that?
It was really beautiful. Really beautiful. It's just like a fairy tale thing, that was. And the Americans, of course, we got some very good food there because we were involved with the Americans. Also, about that time, the regiment decided that because the men were stuck in the barracks a lot, couldn't get out and fraternise, as it were, they wanted to put on film shows. So they sent me off to Bad Oeynhausen, I remember that, for an army cinema course. So I learned to be a projectionist.
Tell us about that. That's an unusual thing to learn.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons for that was when I went into the army, I had been a projectionist in the early days. And the army found this out, and of course, they weren't going to waste it. So they sent me on a course down there. It was a damn good course, actually. Learned a lot on that because obviously I was dealing with a much smaller projector than I dealt with when I was in civilian life.
And what sort of, did you actually do shows?
Oh yeah, we did film shows, I must admit, the quality of the films that we received was very poor.
In what way?
Well, they were broken and cut, and they were never, you know, whoever had them previously hadn't taken care of them. You couldn't order a film, you just ordered films, and you got what came, that was it.
And what sort of thing was it? Was it the latest or not quite latest Hollywood film?
No, they weren't latest Hollywood films. They were around about during the wartime films.
So about 5 years out.
Yeah, about 5 years at least. But that was basically what we did there. And then this is where the memory goes a bit.
I thought you said you moved to Lüneburg.
Yeah, no, that was afterwards. Right. Right. From Lingen, we then up to move back to the UK. Now, I can't remember
exactly. When would this be? In 48, 49?
No, certainly not 49. Must have been 48. We moved back to the UK. And we got stationed at a place called Oadby in Leicestershire.
Do you know how you spell it?
O-A-D-B-Y. Oadby.
And do you know the name of the barracks, or was it...
It was... Well, I can't remember the name of the barracks. We were stationed at Oadby Airfield. It was an airfield during the war. All their tanks were on the airfield, you see. And it was at this point, I think, that we realised what situation the regiment was really in, because we'd never been aware of the fact that all the time we were in Germany, men were leaving the regiment and weren't being replaced, and the regiment was getting smaller. And it wasn't until we got to Oadby that we realised we only had approximately 100 men, including officers and NCOs. There, that was it. That was the regiment.
Now, so, why was that happening?
Well, because all the men had been demobbed and there were no new intakes coming in, right? The National Service hadn't started, I don't think, at that point. So they were still using conscription. And I think at some point or the other, around about the area, they stopped conscription altogether. See? And I think there was a gap of about a year. I'm only guessing at all this. You probably know better than I. There was a gap of about a year between the end of conscription and the start of National Service, when I think the government realised they were well up a creek because they hadn't got any bloody soldiers. So we're stuck back in Oadby with this very small unit. It was hilarious, really. It was quite funny.
In what way?
Well, because they take us up the tank park, which was the airfield. I mean, we had a couple of big hangars there where the planes had been, so we used those for maintenance and all that. But you'd have about something like 20 men and 100 tanks, and you'd have to drive them. So you'd be like a yo-yo, up and down once with that tank, switch it off, into the next tank, up and down, just to keep mobile all the time. You see, they had to be moved. They couldn't just be left there. And that's basically what we were doing until... OB was a sort of a funny thing, you know, there wasn't a lot, it was, there wasn't a lot of interest really there. I remember we went into town, we didn't have like a barracks as such, we were in Nissen huts for a start, which I think was the old airfield. No, it was called Glen Parva Barracks, GLENPARVA. Glen Parva Barracks, that's right. I can't remember what it was like though. But I can remember the name of it. Remember they used to have to take us up by a lorry from there to the airfield because it was quite a distance. And that was basically what we did. Oh, and at that point I became a batman as well. One of the officers wanted a batman and I thought I'd have a go at that. Sounded like an easy job.
Now what were your duties as batman?
Oh, that was really like being a glorified housemaid. Really, you know, kept the house tidy, clean, did the hoovering and all that sort of thing, looked after the kids. I think I stood it for about a month and I thought, it's not this for a guy.
So it's uniform?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you were in uniform.
Did you have to do his uniform?
Oh, yeah, clean I was in Batman, clean it, yeah, clean his boots, all that sort of thing. Did the whole bit for him as well. And then I realised, you know, it wasn't the job I thought it was going to be. So I got out of that a bit quick. But we were also at that point as well because Leicester is a very hunting county, so of course, and as everybody was connected with the military up there, we were doing a lot of extra guards and things like that, you know, balls and all that sort of tremendous amount of things we were doing there. But I seem to remember it was all right, I quite liked it, and then
were you there long? 48
We were certainly there a good 6 months. Could have been a year, I don't know. But we were certainly there a good 6 months. And then we got posted back to Germany. I'm not quite sure why, but they started to increase our strength. We started to get conscriptions. Not conscriptions, but volunteers and things like that. The regiment started to get big again.
Now, how were these new drafts made welcome?
Oh, you know, like that. They at first they were all youngsters. Anyway, they weren't. They were rookies. Plain rookies, just come into the army, done their training the same as I'd done, and then been posted to the unit. But some of them
were regulars.
But they were all regulars. Yeah, at that point, they were all regulars. Now, we didn't get anything like up to strength where the regiment was concerned, nothing like. But I think maybe we must have received maybe about 100, which then gave us a strength of 200, where we should have had a strength of 1,000, remember. But anyway, for some reason, we got sent back to Germany and we went to Lüneburg.
Now, what, is that actually on the heath? Or?
Yeah, Lüneburg. It's Lüneburg Heath and the town was Lüneburg. Again, nice barracks and all that sort of thing. Excellent tank park, which had been, I think, when the Germans were their stables at one point. We also started to get horses back in with the regiment. They had a few horses there as well. We had a farrier and things like that.
And why did you have horses?
Well, for the officers to ride, basically. I mean, they weren't used ceremonially. I don't remember ever seeing an officer on a horse. But they were used for officers.
For recreation?
Yeah. We had a farrier. Farrier sergeant. And it was just, you know, I think what they were trying to do is to get back to, like, pre-war regiment. That's what they were trying to do.